from deep inside your radio.
Cute little story from New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen. The now former mayor of this city, C. Ray Nagin. Yeah, he's right over there. See him. Wanted a visible, visual, tangible legacy as his 8-year term was coming to an end this past spring. So he fast-tracked a project to redo historic Armstrong Park, original site of Congo Square, just outside the French Quarter in New Orleans, to make a grand new entrance to the park off of Rampart Street and to install a new statuary plaza with statues of some jazz greats. But it had to be done quickly because his term was ending in May, this past May, and it had to be complete so that he could dedicate and declare open the new refurbished park. And so a contract was let. It so happens that the contractor had just recently finished some prison time. But forget about that. The contract was let. It was an accelerated schedule. They had floodlights in the park because the crews had to work all night to meet the deadline of the mayor's dedication just days before he left office. And they did so. And he had the press conference and the photo ops and everything. And today in the New Orleans newspaper, it's reported that the concrete wasn't set right in the grand new plaza. And it began sinking and pooling and because they didn't put the wire mesh at the proper place in the concrete concrete to reinforce it properly. And so it's closed. The new park is closed. And so the good news is the mayor really does have the exact proper visual legacy for his term in office. So things sometimes work out right. Now take the case of the latest Al-Qaeda number 3 to be killed by the United States. Sorry, to be, well, yeah, killed, targeted by the United States. And it has been the contention of this program for, the last year and a half, since I started noticing the parade of Al-Qaeda number 3s being bumped off, that A, you don't want that job, and B, it must not be a very important job because they keep refilling it. Well, now, here comes former CIA officer Bruce Riddell, who says, it shows it's been two things, a very dangerous job, and secondly, one that you can refill relatively easily. So I should have been in the CIA. I could figure that out. Don't, if the Al-Qaeda recruiter comes calling, ask for the number 4 job. You'll live longer. Ladies and gentlemen, this week, the EPA issued a draft document, Environmental Protection Administration, for those of you who are joining us late. And it said, yes, formaldehyde causes cancer. Good news for all those people who are living in those formaldehyde fume-laced trailers provided by your federal government. And the predictable response from the Formaldehyde Trade Association is, that wasn't supposed to be made public yet. So it's not just BP. They all like that. I have to say, to the extent that you hear me on this program or elsewhere opining or yakking about the oil spill, I know, ladies and gentlemen, I know absolutely nothing about how to remediate a deep water, unplanned leakage of oil. So as far as I can tell, that qualifies me to be chief executive of BP. I will say this, there is a regulation, regulation, that's what they call them. In Canada, it's called the same season regulation that says if you're going to drill an exploratory well, you have to drill the relief well during the same season, that is to say before winter comes. They have winter in Canada. And had that been the case in this country, of course, the leak, the gusher, would long have been over by now. That is a regulation that could be promulgated. Thank you, My pleasure. By the president, I believe, without the concurrence of Congress. Next time he comes down here, I'll try to tug his sleeve. But it is, you know, we're all looking at those photographs of the birds and other creatures who are stained by oil, and it is, because we humans have that thing that we're, you know, if we see those pictures, if you hear about it, eh. If you see those pictures, it's tragic and heartrending. I just want to say this. Feel sorry as you might, or want to help with the rescuing of those birds. But the creatures who are really, seriously covered in oil are the Democratic and Republican elected representatives of us. And as far as I can tell, they cannot be cleaned off. Hello, welcome to the show. Yeah, just go and try and buy one. From the shores of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, the apologies of the week, just like that.
We're so sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm here. I was just listening. imagining that being sung in the White House this week. Deadline Tokyo, outgoing Japanese Prime Minister Yukio Hatoyama offered an apology at an emergency cabinet meeting this week. A cabinet minister quoted Hatoyama as saying his decision to resign, announced earlier in the day, was, quote, due to his lack of ability to govern. See, that's what we need. Some of that. Deadline New Berlin, New Hampshire. No, sorry, New Berlin, Wisconsin. I get my New Berlins mixed up. Don't you? The mayor of that Milwaukee suburb has apologized for saying in an email that his city is filled with, quote, prejudice and bigoted people, unquote. Jack Chavotero of New Berlin also said he was withdrawing his support for a multifamily senior housing complex, which opponents said would attract crime and illegal drugs. He said he acted out of frustration when he emailed a supporter of the project saying he was bombarded by critics and was asked not to attend to public... He went on to write that New Berlin is, quote, filled with prejudice and bigoted people who, with very few facts, are making this project into something evil and degrading. He has now apologized. Sorry. He just may not have the ability to govern. Deadline Lahore, Pakistan. It's the name of a city. Pakistan has lifted its ban on Facebook after officials from the social networking site apologized for a page deemed offensive to Muslims and removed its contents. The move came almost 2 weeks later, after Pakistan imposed the ban amid anger over the page that encouraged users to post images of the Prophet Muhammad. Many Muslims regard depictions of the Prophet, even favorable ones, as blasphemous. Facebook assured the Pakistani government that nothing of this sort will happen in the future. Officials from the website could not be immediately reached for comment. They had earlier said the contents of the Everybody Draw Muhammad Day page did not violate Facebook's terms. Hey, Everybody Draw Mark Zuckerberg Day. What do you think? Deadline Panama City. Panama's president has formally apologized to the family of an activist who was kidnapped in 1970 and whose remains were later found 2 decades later near a military barracks. President Ricardo Martinelli says the apology to the family of leftist Eliodoro Portugal is, quote, an unavoidable moral duty, unquote. It's the last time an American politician talked like that. But we have the ability to govern. You see, that's the difference. Martinelli said hundreds of Panamanians suffered the same fate during the dictatorship of General Omar Torrijos, who ruled from 1968 until his death in 1981. I believe he was a friend of ours. In 2009, the government accepted responsibility for Portugal's disappearance and agreed to pay his family $256,000. Better to be disappeared by the Panamanians than put out of work by BP, judging just financially. White House press icon Helen Thomas, the grand dame of the Washington Press Corps, suggested at a White House gathering that Jews should, quote, get the hell out of Palestine and go back home to Poland, Germany, America, and everywhere else, unquote. The words from the 89-year-old Hearst newspaper's columnist hit the internet on Friday and sparked a firestorm of controversy. Thomas posted an apology on her personal website. I deeply regret my comments I made last week regarding the Israelis and Palestinians. They do not reflect my heartfelt belief that peace will come to the Middle East only when all parties recognize the need for mutual respect and tolerance. May that day come soon, unquote, she wrote. She is the daughter of Lebanese immigrants. Oh. Deadline London, former Wimbledon junior champion Laura Robson has apologized to her fellow players for saying some of them are, quote, sluts, unquote, who make a bad name for themselves by going out with different guys. The 16-year-old British player, considered her country's most promising in women's tennis, told Vogue magazine they needed to be, quote, more discreet. She conceded this week she'd made a totally inappropriate throwaway comment without considering the consequences. The WTA, the World Women's Tennis Association, says Robson did the right thing by apologizing and adds it was glad she showed, quote, the maturity and good judgment to do so. That's what we want in our female tennis players, maturity. South Carolina Senator Jake Knotts describes it as an apology for a lighthearted comment in which he referred to President Obama and gubernatorial candidate in South Carolina, Nikki Haley, as, quote, ragheads. I get that. It's lighthearted. I'm just enjoying the lightheartedness of it. The public would have been able, he says, to hear firsthand that my raghead comments about Obama and Haley were intended in jest. You see? Amateurs and humor. They really don't mix. Bear in mind, he says, this is a free-willing anything-goes internet radio show that is broadcast from a pub. It's like a local political version of Saturday Night Live. That's damning with faint praise, isn't it? Which is actually where the joke came from, he said. Since my intended humorous context was lost in translation, I apologize. Dateline Los Angeles Twilight Saga star Kristen Stewart is apologizing for comments she made in Britain's Elle magazine. That's E-L-L-E, not L. But it's pronounced L. But it's not spelled L. It's which have left some people outraged. Quote, I really made an enormous mistake, clearly and obviously, and I'm really sorry about my choice of words, Kristen told People. The magazine. I mean, you know, not people. There were people there, but people with a capital. The actress previously compared her life in the Hollywood spotlight and the constant hounding by the paparazzi to a sexual assault, telling Elle, the photos are so, I feel like I'm looking at someone being raped. A lot of the time I can't handle it. I never expected this would be my life. I've made stupid remarks before, and I've always reasoned, whatever, they can think what they want, she's explained to People. Violated definitely would have been a better way of expressing the thought. She said her regretful comments have torn her apart. It's a rough life, being in the Twilight Saga. Dateline London, British Airways has apologized for a picture in a company magazine that showed a boarding pass with the name of Osama bin Laden. Of course. The company said this week that the image of the fake boarding pass appeared in LHR News, a biweekly publication for British Airways employees at London Heathrow Airport. That's what they're doing. They're reading that. I was wondering where they were. Quote, a mistake was made and we're working to find out how this occurred. Apologies for the error, British Airways said in its Twitter message. So it's not just the petroleum over there. It's the airways. There's something in the water. I swear. Dateline Richmond, Virginia businessman and major Republican donor Fred Malik, now serving as an advisor to Governor Robert McDonnell, said this week his decision to compile a list of Jews for former President Nixon was the biggest mistake of his life. Quote, I've apologized so many times over the past 40 years for that unfortunate decision of mine to follow the direction of the president. Over my 5 decades of career, I've made mistakes. That was the biggest one I've ever made in my life. I think I've apologized and atoned for it. I've learned from it, and it's time to move on. He will only be compiling lists of Arabs from now on. Illinois Republican Senate hopeful Mark Kirk has apologized for misrepresenting his military record. This seems to be going around. And here's his explanation. See if this makes you think of a former president. Quote, I simply misremembered it wrong, unquote. Kirk said that in a long sit-down interview with the Chicago Sun-Times. I think he should have been standing up. Quote, I want to be very contrite. Babe, you are, or you're not. You don't want to be. Oh, sorry, I was giving advice on apologies. Hey, that's my next book. Quote, I want to be very contrite and say that there was a casualness with which I sometimes describe military details. Well, of course. Who wouldn't? Quote, and if it gave the impression that my military record was larger than it was, I apologize. Unquote. If. That's an if. Point down for that. Speaking of BP, BP Chief Tony Hayward has apologized for telling reporters over the week last weekend that he'd like to have his life back. You know, the life where he cut short safety procedures and ignored the risks. That life. Speaking of which, does it occur to you after the Wall Street implosion and the thing in the Gulf that the one occupation this country either has too few people filling or the wrong people filling is risk assessment officer? Hayward, BP's chief executive officer, told reporters that there isn't any last week that there isn't anyone who wants the company's oil spill crisis to end more than him and added, you know, I'd like my life back. He said it in the voice of the Geico. Gecko, yes, that's true. While that comment was preceded by an apology to all those impacted by the explosion and the growing oil spill, it provoked outrage by, among others, Congressman Charlie Melanson from this area, who called on BP to fire Hayward. But now Hayward issued this apology. I made a hurtful and thoughtless comment when I said that I wanted my life back. When I read that recently, I was appalled. I apologize, especially to the families of the 11 men who lost their lives. Those words don't represent how I feel about this tragedy. Nor do these. Oh, sorry. And certainly don't represent the hearts of the people of BP, many of whom live and work in the Gulf, who are doing everything they can to make things right. The rest of it they can buy time to put on TV. And they are. Dateline Amherst, New Hampshire. School officials have apologized for allowing the pictures of two teens charged in connection with a deadly home invasion to be included in the yearbook. Like that's an honor? Dateline Phoenix, Arizona. A new mural at a public school in Prescott, Arizona is now the topic of an intense debate about color and censorship. The artists say the mural they painted is supposed to show the diversity of the kids at the elementary school, but following comments by a city council member, the school principal asked the artist to paint the kids' faces a lighter color. The mural was painted last month on the wall of the Miller Valley Elementary School at the corner of the busiest intersection in Prescott. The controversy was sparked by a comment City Councilman Steve Blair made on his radio show, 2 weeks ago. To depict the biggest picture on that building as a black person, I would have to ask the question why, he said on the Steve Blair show. I guess he's the host. Yeah, Steve, that's a good question, he said in reply. After the radio show, the school principal asked the mural artists, a group called Mural Mice, to lighten the boy's face. When we began to paint the picture, nobody really thought about the color of the skin on the kids, said artist R.E. Wall. Yes, he paints murals. Wall started to paint over the boy's face with a flesh-toned, by flesh-toned, I guess you mean Caucasian flesh-toned, because it was flesh-toned. See? A flesh-toned color, but stopped at the forehead after getting a bad feeling. When you get attached to something, you like it the way it is, and somebody who's a non-artist comes along and tells you that's not good enough, he said, babe, tell me about it. Councilman Blair, though, defended his comments. To me, it wasn't about race. They made it about race. If I've offended anybody out there, I apologize to them, because we have a lot of cultures in Prescott, he said. He said cultures. He didn't say we have a lot of culture in Prescott. Don't misquote the man now. Dateline New York, AT&T, oh, I almost put the ampersand before the wrong T. AT&T apologized to a customer Thursday after one of its agents, they got agents. Am I the only one with that? Left a message on a customer's voicemail warning him that he would receive a cease and desist letter after the customer emailed AT&T's chief executive officer directly with some complaints. Giorgio Galante, yeah, Mr. Galante wants to talk to you in the ante room. It's an AT&T customer. Oh, sorry. He's a customer. I apologize, Giorgio. He's an AT&T customer and iPhone owner since 2006 from Buffalo, New York, told CNN he was dissatisfied with the company's handling of questions surrounding his iPhone upgrade eligibility dates. Yeah, that sounds a little complicated for a phone. He was also displeased with the recent news of AT&T's new pricing plan, which will end unlimited data plans. He emailed CEO Randall Stevenson directly about his issues. Please don't have one of your $12 an hour executive relations college students call me. I found them to be generally poorly informed, and they have little authority to do anything sensible, his email said. Then he says, I got that nasty gram back in the form of a voicemail. The message left by an employee at the company's executive response team warns Galante that if he continues to email the CEO, a cease and desist letter may be sent to you. AT&T now says we're apologizing to our customer. We're working with him today to address his questions and concerns. This is not the way we want to treat customers. You know, like, they want to be contrite. It's a lot of wanting. I want to show you this next piece of footage. We just can't. Sacramento Kings guard Tyreke Evans has apologized for his bad decision-making after he was cited for reckless driving when police clocked him driving 130 miles per hour on the freeway. He was late for a pickup game and said he didn't realize just how fast he was driving. He wasn't influenced by drugs or alcohol, but police briefly handcuffed him because his windows were tinted, and they conducted a felony stop. So if you're going to drive 130 miles an hour, ladies and gentlemen, don't tint your windows. That's good advice from the good hands people here at the show. And that is, those are the apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. You know, we don't want to look back. We want to look forward. We don't want to point fingers. We don't want to play the blame game. But former President George W. Bush this week defended his administration's use of waterboarding. Sure, we waterboarded colleague Sheikh Mohammed, he reportedly said. And we'd do it again to save lives. He was speaking to the Economic Club of Grand Rapids, Michigan. According to the Associated Press, there was no recording of the appearance. I guess that was just because no reporter wanted to. Couldn't have been any strictures applied to the free press. by a former president. But waterboarding would do it again if it would save lives. So trying to put the best face on it. And here's a little help.
Well, it may not be legal, but it sure as heck makes me safer. And it may not yield useful intel, at least that's what they say. But it's a pleasure so rare, seeing captives gulp air. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Let's go. It's not torture if I say it ain't. Those conventions are so old. Surfing, 'cause you can't get off if you want to. And it's really hard work, but for us it feels much more like play. If the tables were turned, we'd feel really burned. But let's go water.
This is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. A report being launched this week by the International Labor Rights Forum, according to the Daily Telegraph of London, brings to light the plight of football stitchers, who are at the very bottom of soccer's multi-billion dollar empire. Adidas, which makes replicas of the official World Cup football, the Jabulani, and the world's football-making capital, Sialkot, is targeting sales of about $2 billion in the balls this year. Meanwhile, the stitchers, who make 70% of the world's hand-stitched footballs, say they do not earn enough to feed their children. One worker who said it took 2.5 hours to stitch each ball for Adidas at the Forward Sports Factory explained he could earn a maximum of $3 a day when the plant was at full capacity. Most days, he earned less. I'm trying to get a better job, he said, speaking on condition of anonymity. The problem is that unemployment is so high because the bosses know we have no choice and can pay us less. Over half of the 218 workers surveyed by the International Labor Rights Forum, said they did not make the legal minimum wage per month. Sialkot. Doesn't say. We'll look it up. No, we won't. Footballs were first made in Sialkot for the British Army 100 years ago. The industry has grown dramatically since, now comprising 224 factories and almost 2,000 stitching centers. But it is under competition and pressure from China and from rights organizations. No one could say, hand on heart, they're happy with the lives of workers making sports balls in Sialkot, said Rob Cameron, chief executive of Fair Trade Labeling Organization. For a product meant to bring joy, we want to make sure it is not being made with pain. All right, then. News of the new Iraq. Gunmen have killed a third candidate from the Sunni-backed coalition that won the most seats in the March parliamentary election. A slaying, the alliance says, is part of a politically motivated campaign of assassinations. It's the new democracy. We brought the thing, but the Faris Jassim al-Jaburi's attackers came to his home in the middle of the night dressed in army uniforms, according to his brother, a police officer who was there at the time. He said they demanded details about al-Jaburi, then found him sleeping on the roof to escape the heat, shot him three times, and fled. He had run on the secularist Iraqiya list. So that's the new democracy we're leaving there, because they're shooting the seculars. The Iraqiya coalition, headed by former Prime Minister Alawi, had been at the center of a political showdown since the inconclusive parliamentary election in March. He was the third Alawi-linked candidate to be gunned down in and around the city of Mosul in recent months. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, you should feel proud. You helped build it. The Burmese government is attempting to... From the Times of London, from out behind their paywall... Oh, that's a rough paywall. The Burmese government is attempting to build nuclear weapons and long-range missiles, according to a military defector who smuggled photographs and documents of secret nuclear equipment out of the isolated dictatorship. Evidence presented by the former Burmese officer and weapons engineer suggests the country is still a long way from creating usable nuclear weapons. But the fact that it has a nascent nuclear program may cause international alarm. U.S. Senator Jim Webb, who in recent months has become an unofficial U.S. envoy to Burma, who knew, this week canceled a planned trip to what we used to call Rangoon, the capital, because of concern about the reports of the defector's testimony on a Norway-based news site, Democratic Voice of Burma. The U.S. Assistant Secretary of State, Kurt Campbell, accused the Burmese junta of violating a U.N. resolution by allegedly buying arms from North Korea. And where did North Korea get its nuclear materials and techniques from? A.Q. Khan, free man walking around Pakistan. Photographs and documents smuggled out of Burma last year revealed the junta had held secret high-level talks with North Korea, which was helping with the construction of a secret network of tunnels and underground military facilities. Hey, those North Korean tunnels are good. And from the Guardian of London, BP, you heard of them, right? They're hiving off, that's British for spinning off, its Gulf of Mexico oil spill operation to a separate in-house business to be run by an American in a bid to isolate the, quote, toxic side of the company and dilute some of the anti-British feeling aimed at Chief Executive Tony Hayward, the company announced this week. I guess they announced it in Britain because I hadn't heard about this until then. But that's why this is news from outside the bubble, you see. Ladies and gentlemen, have I explained the premise again enough for you? The surprise announcement was made during a teleconference with Citi and Wall Street analysts in which Hayward attempted to shrug off the personal criticism, saying words could, quote, not break his bones. Okay, Tony, let us know when you graduate to fourth grade, because we'll be looking forward to that. BP has faced mounting anger. You know, responsibility for the leaking well and cleanup strategy will be placed in the hands of Bob Dudley. I inadvertently called him Ed last week. One of the company's senior directors. Dudley is a U.S. citizen. He's been looking for a suitable role in the company since he was thrown out of Moscow in a battle with the Russian shareholders of a joint venture in the middle of 2008. Well, that looks good on anybody's resume. Hayward said the cleanup business would be run separately by Dudley with his own staff, but the finances and budget would come from the main BP group. We would want to check on that, wouldn't we? A company whose worldwide pockets are pretty deep, but can then say, oh, our American company only has $4 and change, babe. The BP chief executive said the purpose of the split was to allow Dudley to concentrate on the Gulf problem, while he, Hayward, starring in current TV commercials, and other directors were not distracted from keeping the main business on track. Screwing up other parts of the... Oh, no. Hayward stressed, however, that his priority was sorting out all the wider fallout from the rig disaster, and he apologized repeatedly for the loss of lives. Everyone at BP is heartbroken by this event, he said. Hiving it off to Bob Dudley, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you know that... Oh, that's news from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know that the oil has started to wash up on the white sand beaches of Florida. Both Governor Haley Barbour and Mississippian Senator Bill Nelson of Florida spent precious airtime on the Sunday Yak shows this week saying, well, the most serious damage to us has been in the tourism because people hear these news stories and they don't come down. And so by merely saying what I just said, I'm contributing to the problem that there are tar balls being found on the beaches of the panhandle of Florida right now. So as I say, I'm acknowledging that I'm doing some damage, and I want to do my best with a suggestion to help remedy the situation.
One thing all kids love is Gloop. So why take them on a road trip to a vacation paradise that's got no Gloop? When you can take them to BP Attraction's hottest new destination, Tar Beachopolis. It's beach fun like you've never had it before.
Mom, this fur is like a pet. Ooh, Gloopy!
How's the water, kids?
It's sunshine, sea breeze, and plenty of Gloop.
Hey, dude, I'm surfing on sand. Way Gloopy.
So fill up the car, pack the whole family in, and take them on a once-in-a-lifetime trip. Because Tar Beachopolis has to close when the Gloop goes. Tar Beachopolis, Florida's new play place, where the fun never slops.
Gloop may contain toluene, benzene, and other volatile compounds. Do not inhale. Ventilator sold separately.
Go. from CPR, Continental Public Radio. Time now for another visit with...
Sir Nigel Froude, the petroscience dude. Hello, Ira. Hello, boys and girls.
Nigel, this week looks like you've built a whole chemistry set over here.
Not quite. Just a few really remarkable demonstrations to show how man works in the conditions a mile down below the surface of the ocean.
A mile down? Mm-hmm. Let's see that. If I remember my math, that's more than 5,000 feet.
Spot on, Ira.
Now, this thing over here looks like some kind of distillation apparatus. I remember that from our show on... cracking hydrocarbons.
Well, you've got a memory like a blowout preventer, Ira. And in fact, this apparatus is a simple version of a blowout preventer. Mm. This array down here is producing fluid under 2,000 pounds per square inch of pressure.
Well, that's the ambient pressure a mile down.
Oh, you've studied your cue cards well, young man. And you see, that's the fluid that's colored blue. Mm-hmm. Now, the distillation apparatus will act as a conduit as we supply high-pressure fluid, the green fluid, mm-hmm. in the opposite direction, that is, down, to stop the blue stuff.
And we'll see that happen right through this glass tubing.
Indeed. Now I'll just hit the button. Mm. And I'll hit it again.
Seems to be functioning suboptimally.
Might be a short in there. Oh. Are you all right, Ira?
Yes. I was wondering why you were wearing those goggles.
Gift from Inan. Mm. All right, let's go over to this next demonstration.
Wow, that's the biggest pair of scissors I've ever seen.
Well, technically, Ira, they're shears. Mm. And this robot over here mm-hmm. is built to use those shears a mile down to cut through metal pipe.
Oh, that's a real robot, mm-hmm. Like the one that cleans your carpet?
Even more scientific than that. Now, I'll just power up the robot. And watch it wield those massive... Oh, we're stopped.
Hmm. Were the shears too heavy for it?
I think the interns brought the clumsy robot prototype. That's for a totally different project. Mm-hmm. Well, that brings us, I should think, to our final demonstration this week... how a tabletop-sized nuclear explosion a mile down can seal a leak.
Oops, this is pledge week for some of our stations, so for now, that'll be goodbye from me, Ira Zipkin.
And from me, Nigel Froude, the petroscience dude.
Funding for this program came from Brutish Petroleum, lubricating your world. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Sitting on the front porch, ice cream in my hand, melting in the sun, all that chocolate on my tongue, and that's good enough reason to live. Good enough reason to live. Sitting in the bathtub, high five playing low, digging old Al Green, well, you must know what I mean. And that's good enough reason to live. Good enough reason to live. If I die young, at least I got some chocolate on my tongue. If I die young, at least I got some chocolate on my tongue. Sitting in the front seat, good girl in my arms, smiling in my eyes, getting me all hypnotized, and that's good. enough reason to live. Good enough reason to live. If I die young, at least I got some chocolate on my tongue. If I die young, at least I got some chocolate on, chocolate on my tongue. If I die young, at least I got some chocolate on my tongue.
This is Le Show. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. A defrocked priest who admitted molesting at least 25 children in Stockton, California, is due to begin receiving monthly payments from an annuity purchased by the Stockton Diocese when he turns 65 this week. The payments will total more than $94,000 over 10 years. They've outraged abuse victims who say Oliver O'Grady shouldn't be rewarded and any funds should be going to victims' assistance programs. Bishop Stephen Blair, who arranged the annuity, said it was part of a deal, to assure that O'Grady left the priesthood. Blair said he recognized the payments would be received poorly, quote, but there was a reason, unquote. O'Grady was convicted in 1994 of molesting two brothers. He served almost 7 years in prison, then was deported to his native Ireland. There's more to Ireland than this. And there's more. John Caruso, a priest from Newfoundland, Canada, was convicted of sexually abusing an altar boy 11 years ago. No, sorry, John Caruso was the victim. He is, the priest was Reverend James Neal. Caruso and his family sued Neal, the diocese, and the former bishops for $8.6 million, claiming that the church officials knew or should have known the priest was a sexual predator. The response was an unexpected legal thunderbolt. Neal and the diocese countersued Caruso's mother and father. They claimed the parents were negligent in failing to get counseling and medical help for their teenage son. The legal hardball shattered that once devout family. Caruso's parents had to hire their own lawyers. Family relationships were strained. Caruso attempted suicide several times. His mother died while the legal war still raged. She took it to her grave thinking she was part of the problem, says a sobbing 40-year-old Caruso. 4 months after burying his mother, Caruso accepted the diocese's undisclosed financial offer. "Why do you think I took the settlement?" he asked. "I couldn't take it anymore. I was going to kill myself." And the future Pope Benedict XVI refused to defrock an American priest who confessed to molesting numerous children and even served time for it because the priest wouldn't agree to the discipline. Documents obtained by the Associated Press from court filings in the case of the late Reverend Alvin Campbell of Illinois show Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, following church law at the time, turned down a bishop's plea to remove the priest for no other reason than the abuser's refusal to go along with it. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of the program. And now, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can, Rod. The first new projections of future aircraft emissions in 10 years predict that carbon dioxide and other gases from air traffic will become a significant source of global warming as they double or triple by 2050. The study is in Environmental Science and Technology, a semi-monthly journal. Hey, you know what? Let's go monthly. Oh, no, it's more often than that. Bethan Owen and colleagues note that aviation is not now one of the main drivers of global warming. International aviation not even included in the Kyoto Protocol. Global air traffic currently contributes to between 2 and 3% of carbon dioxide emissions. But the scientists' computer model forecast that emissions of carbon dioxide would likely double or triple within the next 50 years by 2100, up to 7 times current levels. So don't fly in 2100. That's advice from me. I'm going to get on a plane tomorrow, so what do I know? Less ice covers the Arctic today than at any time in recent geologic history. That's the conclusion of an international group of researchers who've compiled the first comprehensive history of Arctic ice. For decades, scientists have striven to collect sediment cores from the difficult-to-access Arctic Ocean floor to discover what the Arctic was like in the past, their most recent goal to bring a long-term perspective to the ice loss we see today. In an upcoming issue of Quaternary Science Review, a team led by Ohio State University has re-examined the data from the past and ongoing studies, nearly 300 in all, and combined them to form a big-picture view of the pole's climate history stretching back millions of years. The ice loss that we see today, the ice loss started in the early 20th century and sped up during the last 30 years, appears to be unmatched over at least the last few thousand years, says Leonid Polyak, a research scientist at Ohio State. He's lead author of the paper. Satellites can provide... Okay, so you get the idea. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap, it's clean, it's pape, it's cheap, it's pape, it's cheap, it's clean. The nuclear industry is being offered what campaigners claim is a taxpayer subsidy in the United Kingdom on the disposal costs of waste from new reactors following a secret lobbying campaign, according to the Guardian newspaper. The previous government had planned to charge the industry a high fixed disposal tax tied to the amount of nuclear waste it produced. It also told the industry that responsibility for the waste to be transferred to the government only after the waste had been disposed of at least 110 years from the start of reactors' operations. Both proposals were deeply unpopular with the industry, especially since the government already faces a $5-6 billion funding black hole over existing radioactive waste. But the industry wants the standards relaxed so that the government takes charge of the waste after 60 years. That's nice. And there's more. Widespread safety failings at the Sellafield nuclear reprocessing plant in England. The government safety watchdog is cracking down on Britain's biggest and oldest nuclear complex after a series of radioactive leaks and safety blunders. Despite private sector managers receiving multi-million-dollar performance-related payments from the government's nuclear decommissioning authority. I believe that's with the government. I can't figure out the government over there. A nuclear waste plant at Sellafield has been closed down by the health and safety executive. That is part of the government. And the government is taking legal action to force the site's operators to improve their flawed safety procedures. That all sounds reassuring. And then a new leak of radioactive material has been found at the troubled Vermont nuclear plant, Vermont Yankee. But it's been fixed as well. Found and fixed. Vapor and water containing 13 different radioactive substances was found late Friday coming from a pipe in a hole workers dug to find the source of an earlier leak. This was a new leak, said spokesperson for the plant. The leak has been stopped. There is no threat to public health or safety. Because it's clean, it's cheap, it's safe, it's too whatever to meter. I'll tell you, I'm so reassured I'm going to move next to that plant. That's how safe I think it is. Or at least right next to the spokesman. One of the two. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internets at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. I say whenever you want it, but not now. You don't want it now. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com available as a free download to members at audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. Abby, just like all the contributors to the Better Late Than Never file, get their stuff in on time if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. A tip of the LeShow chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in Exile, and Hawaii desks, and to the film editor of The Big Uneasy, Tom Roach, our in-studio guest today. Hope you enjoy the refreshments. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM. The email address for this broadcast and a playlist of music heard hereon, just part of the cornucopia of features and flaws, available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Talk to you next week from London.